All right, I will call the meeting to order, and Linda will just do the roll call by looking at you and writing it down. We're not going to do it verbally or on the computer. Before we get into the agenda that's printed, John Menninger has an item that hopefully will interest many of you.
Okay, on, as some of you probably don't know, most of you probably don't, I serve on the Salvation Army Advisory Board, and May 17th is National Salvation Army Week. They had an idea over there that it might be nice exposure and publicity for the Salvation Army and for us if we had a group of county supervisors that would help serve supper at the Salvation Army headquarters on 8th and State Street on Wednesday, May 20th. They'd like 6 to 8 of us to help do that. You'd be there at 4 o'clock. Meal is at 4:30. Be all done by 5:30, so your time commitment would only be about an hour and a half. I think they serve somewhere over 100 people every night at the Salvation Army. For some of you who may not have been in there for a long time, it might be interesting, and it would be something that we could do, and we might even be able to get some real positive publicity for the county. So we're going to pass around a sign-up sheet, and hopefully we get 6 or 8 people, no more than 8. But don't be shy. If we get more than 8, we'll deal with that problem later. But if you can do it 4 o'clock Wednesday, May 20th, you come in the back door right there by the kitchen area, and I'll be there to help you too. So it'll be fun. Mr. O'Malley says he's going to show up, and
I'll help serve.
Yep. Yeah.
Now do we need 9? Dessert for you.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we eat, but anyway, hopefully pass it around.
Well, when we were talking about county employee furloughs, Mr. O'Malley indicated that he was going to volunteer to cut back some of his time, so perhaps he's below that threshold now and qualifies for free or reduced meals.
Mr. Chairman, we're not on the agenda anymore.
Oh, we're not. Thank you. So that's going around. People, hopefully we'll get some a good turnout in that regard. If you have one of these on your desk, you have been delinquent in responding to us, and we will not allow you to leave tonight until you fill this out, preferably actually fill it out and just bring it up here while the meeting is going on. This is the information for our directory. We need to know that the information we're providing is correct, and also that we can put certain things in there like your phone number and so forth. So please, if you have this on your desk, we haven't gotten one back from you yet, so we need that as soon as possible. All right, and next up is Bev Mock.
Okay, most of you have either a booklet like this or it's a lighter green color. It's the program for the WASC Annual State Conference. Those of you who don't have one are because you were at the Planning Resources and Development Committee and already received yours. We'd like to invite all of you to attend the conference, and of course it's being held June 15th and 16th at the Radisson Hotel. It's the first time it's been here since the late 1980s, I believe, and they're expecting between 200 and 300 people. To register, go through Steve Doyle's office. Margaret Nordine will register you, and then you will pay her what you owe. The cost for the whole thing is $95, and for Tuesday it's $35, but this Wednesday we're going to be discussing some other options. Possibly some of us from the La Crosse County might want to just attend some sessions and not do the whole thing. Or maybe you plan to go to the whole thing and you want your spouse to come to the dinner, and we're going to find out what that will cost. And Margaret will know the answers to these things after Wednesday.
But for board members who want to attend, there is no charge. The county will pay for that. It's you, if you're bringing your spouse or significant other or both,
okay,
then you would need to.
Okay. Okay, quickly, there are some interesting tours that are written up in the booklet, but I just got the information on the sessions, the concurrent sessions. The four topics are supporting positive environments for youth, keeping kids out of trouble. Another one, it's not the family it used to be. A third one, aging in our communities. And the fourth, helping our families and communities in hard economic times. This is a good chance to be meeting some new people who are on the various committees, the Ag Committee, the Extension Committees, the equivalent of our Planning Resources Development Committee. If anybody wants to talk further about donating to the auction, as I asked you to do a while back, or you have questions, come and talk to me after the meeting.
Okay, thank you, Bev. Mm-hmm. Okay, that gets us to the Proclamation for Law Enforcement, Public Safety, and Courts Month.
Whereas in a free society, law enforcement is entrusted and expected to protect the civil rights of its residents and visitors to our community, and whereas Cross County employees serve to enhance public safety in the courts, district attorney, sheriff, patrol, and jail, emergency management coordination, medical examiner, and public safety communications, and whereas thousands of residents and visitors are helped each year by the professionals who respond to emergencies and assist those in need, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of May as Law Enforcement, Public Safety, and Courts Month, and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to ensuring the safety of its county residents and visitors to our community.
Moved by Vicki Burke, second by Ray Ebert. Assume you're okay on that. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously. Okay, brief update on the status of H1N1 influenza.
Hi, folks. I'm Doug Moorman, director of the County Health Department. We've had about 400 cases in Wisconsin. So far, that jumped a lot in the last day, but it jumped because there was lots of unprocessed tests in the laboratory hopper. We're really lucky here in La Crosse that we've submitted 17 potential samples, all of which have turned out to be negative. There is absolutely no question that we will have disease in La Crosse in time. It just is a matter of time. The health department has been following this public health emergency plan, which we put together some time back, and then more recently we've been working on a pandemic portion of that public health plan. The chairman, your county board chair, has participated in that, and several of you have helped us put that plan together in months past, and we are, in fact, using it. In the health department, there's about 68 people who work there. In the last 18 days, 21 of them have been involved in this effort. In a variety of ways. Over the last 18 days, we've had staff on either working on this issue 7 days a week. Fortunately, things are going well. In that time, we spent about $25,000 total. About 20 grand of that is staff time, and the other five is associated with almost five, not quite five, is associated with buying some supplies that in the event that the disease progresses, we have masks and various personal protective equipment for employees if it develops. All of that 25 grand is within the health department's budget. We've moved things around in order to accommodate it. We've had lots of folks that are on salary that work more hours than they would ordinarily, but we're doing it within our budget. You all should be receiving, at least I think you are, a briefing. We do several briefings. We do a briefing for employees to help employees understand what they need to do to protect themselves. We are working with the media on a regular basis. We're working with a whole snag of healthcare providers and businesses and schools and daycare centers and institutions of higher learning and others that will be affected by this disease because it will come to their community. It will come to their employees and to the clients that they serve. We expect in our department that we'll be working on this for another 12 months or so. And the reason we will is that even as it's dying down, which is wonderful, the disease is a new kind of influenza, which means that it will continue to spread. And whether it spreads this fall or not, in a more dangerous way, we're yet to know. But so we will continue to be working on this special kind of influenza as well as the normal influenza that you've been experiencing yourselves over the last however many years and that has killed people in La Crosse County every year. If you have suggestions on things you think that we could be doing that we're not doing, I'm very interested in hearing about them. Certainly after the meeting so I'm very interested in knowing what kinds of things you think that we could be doing that maybe we're not. And that's the end of my report unless there are specific questions.
I have a question. Is it true that cured ham comes from pigs that have recovered from swine flu?
There's a rumor to that regard.
I'm sorry. Hey, for what I get paid, come on. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doug, I just want to say thank you for the updates. From my perspective, good. Getting those daily is very helpful. Good. You know, reassuring, lets us answer questions that
we might get asked, and I appreciate it.
It's helpful.
We are trying to determine whether we're sending you too much stuff or not. So, good.
Other questions or comments? Jill Billings.
Well, I also want to say that I heard you on WLSU with Mary Meehan Stroob, and it was an excellent interview. I want to thank you for your work and the way you presented the information. I think I had sent you an email that I had gotten an alarmist email the day before, and the type of information that you gave out and the way you did it was, I think, really good.
We're really fortunate. We have a number of folks that have been able to be engaged with the media in a variety of ways, and I expect that to continue. Frankly, folks will get much more excited as soon as there's a death that occurs in our county, and it would just be a surprise if it didn't happen. We have 15 deaths a year from regular influenza that's been happening every year. A number of years back, we had a death in a child. That doesn't happen very often. The next day, there were 400 people standing in line at an immunization clinic in our department, which we had been trying to get folks to attend. Excuse me. So when it happens, there will be excited folks. But hopefully we're doing well at preparing the vast majority of people to do the things that they should be thinking about doing now.
Other questions or comments? Jeff.
These things mutate, is that right?
Yes.
What causes it to mutate? Is it the number of cases, more cases, the more likely it is to mutate, or can it still mutate after you say we're in a decline? Can it just
take it off? It could mutate in the opposite direction. There's literally millions of moving parts in every one of those virus cells, and it's not really a cell. And if one of those million parts moves in a different direction, then we have a whole snag of new activity. We have, in any given time in the country or in the world, there are a couple of hundred different kinds of influenza that are affecting people all the time. The reason we're so concerned about this particular kind is that this kind is, we've been used to this 100 different kinds going on, but this one is a novel one. This is new, and there's just a ton of that we don't know about it. And it has some portions of it that are scary and others that are not, and so we're trying to sort that out.
John.
Yeah, I remember, I'm sure you were there, Doug, about a year or so ago, there was a pandemic conference over at Logistics Health. Is that what thing you were referring to before?
Yep.
And it was interesting. And even then they said it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, these things are kind of scary, and people are prone to panic, and particularly in the technologically driven days we have today. I mean, people are getting a lot of information, good and bad, all the time. I mean, I remember my grandma talking about the 1918 epidemic. And for people who have older parents and grandparents, you may have heard them talk about it. And there was people dying. I don't know how many died in La Crosse County, but I think it was like a million people in the United States, wasn't it? Something like that? A quarter of a million?
Yes. My understanding, there were several hundred people who died in La Crosse County. The normal is 15, so it gives you some sense of the...
But death was an everyday thing back
then. Yeah, but it doesn't. But it wasn't uniform in its distribution across the country. So...
Background music.
Yeah, it's good. It's exciting.
When you go on too long, we're going to do that from now on. Anything further, John? That's for not laughing at my pig joke. Any other questions or comments? Ooh. Thank you, Doug.
Welcome.
All right. Report on consideration of assisted living facility at Hillview. Pete Eide is here.
Well, we have a presentation. I've actually got three slides I'm going to start out with, and After the last county board meeting and the long discussion that we had about this, Pete and I had a bit of a chance to reflect on just a number of the reactions as well as input that we got, and we thought we'd better do a better job of bringing you more information as we're contemplating this. And really, in hindsight, we should have done a little bit more of what we're going to do tonight before we brought you the last resolution. One of the things that we recognize is that for so many years, Pete's predecessor and myself have been working with the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee, and then along with Pete's work for quite some time about consideration of this idea. And we probably leapt a little bit ahead of what the full board had an understanding of what the dynamics are around and related to Hillview. And so tonight, what we've got to do, if we can flick to the next slide, because we want to move quickly through this so that we get into the substance of it. It's got to be in the slideshow version.
It's all right.
The important thing is that you've got information in front of you, and we're going to walk through some of this as well as obviously have enough time for questions. The first three slides are mine, and the rest are Pete and Kelly Kramer. But I want to make sure you understand we're not trying to persuade anybody tonight. We're trying to give you information. This is simply for background information. Since your last meeting, Hillview staff and myself have worked very closely with finance and looking at the information that you'll have here as well. We also spent about an hour meeting directly with Todd Wilson and Tom Rand and talking with them about their questions. We also offered to them two different occasions to ask them to come and attend the meeting tonight, and also with Steve Doyle's permission to offer to you to have them address the board and to answer questions or to make observations about what we're presenting tonight. Both of them declined by email today. So maybe that's another invitation sometime in the future or however you want to deal with that. But we're going to try to respond to the questions that were raised in the letter that was on your desk last time, as well as other conversations that we had with both these individuals, so you have as much information as you can. And also, Dennis, you asked me to pass this on to the committee. I passed this on to committee today when they met this morning. So we're just trying to give you as much information as we have. In the end, we want to make sure that you have a brief overview of the history and how expanding the continuum of care at Hillview's campus would benefit Hillview with the assisted living. Attempt to answer most of the questions that we've heard from the private providers. But in the end, the county board is always in a unique position that you're not just the board of directors or the operating entity of a nursing home and that whole operation. You're also elected by the people, obviously, and will be asked to respond to how does this fit into other providers. So you're in a unique position, unlike boards of directors of just a nursing home or a continuum of care. You're also getting asked questions about this. So ultimately, the decision is yours, whatever we recommend, whatever information we bring you, but we want to make sure you have as much information as possible as we continue to evaluate what makes sense. If we could go to the next slide, then. The two additional items that I wanted to touch on is a lot of you that aren't on the aging long-term care might not know all the issues related to county nursing homes, and I've been in this business for a very long time. I've been on both sides of this issue about counties in the nursing home business. I've watched some of the most publicly wrenching, most difficult debates about counties is what they do with the nursing homes. Over 40 nursing homes have closed since 1999. 13 county nursing homes have been sold since 1986, and out of the 42 remaining county nursing homes, only 29% do not receive property tax levy support. Hillview is one of those, by the way.
Steve, let me stop you at that point. Ralph, maybe you remember, what year did we talk about the possibility of selling Hillview? We actually had a study on that, and we decided not to.
I don't want you to age yourself, but it probably was close to 20 years ago.
Yeah. That's why I asked you, because you've been around longer than I have. Not to age you either, Ralph.
And being that Hillview is a unique facility, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, The fact is that it's a preferred facility by many in our community, and it's one of the reasons that it ends up surviving and not having to rely primarily on Medicaid and Medicare, but has a variety of revenues, which I'll talk about. But our new administrator, Pete, was hired in December of 2005, and one of the first things he did was to go through the difficult standards of pursuing Medicare funding, and there's a specific certification. It's a whole lot of paperwork. It ends up dealing with the types of care the person needs. There's a whole complicated thing that I've heard Pete and his staff explain differently, but it ended up generating over $600,000 a year in the best years to the bottom line of Hillview, and puts us in a more positive position to make sure, again, to continue to not require levy support. Hillview has to continue to evolve, in our opinion, over time. Their campus provides sufficient land for expansion of services that contribute to the Hillview bottom line without a cost of land acquisition. When you get a chance, when you leave the meeting tonight, there's a copy of the site plan. We won't go through it in detail, but there are roughly 13 acres there that are possible for development other than the baseball fields and parking lots and those kinds of things. You have the ability long-term to continue to evolve the continuum of care at Hillview, and we think that's part of the responsibility of staff is to bring you that kind of information and be thinking about that, not just the next 6 months, but next year, 5 years from now, and beyond. Finally, no new tax levy support is available. We are not in a position that if Hillview were to need tax levy, that we would even have the ability to provide that. You know and have realized how much time myself and finance have spent with Lakeview trying to come up with options there. It's not that we like Hillview any less than Lakeview, but the difficulty, given a property tax freeze and the rest of the issues that we've got right now, we have to look for long-term viability for Hillview. They have not received tax levy support for the past 7 years. If we go to the next slide, this is my last one.
Oh,
click that.
Just waiting.
The Hillview financial picture, and this is in your handout, that for the 12 years prior to 2002, we used to provide some levy to Hillview. Back in the early 1990s, we provided as much as $477,000, $499,000, $179,000. You see the rest of the numbers there. Hillview was not always as successful in being off the levy, partly because of, I believe it was debt service at the time, dealing with some of the improvements out there. 2009 Hillview budgeted revenues is about $13 million. It's mainly in Medicare, Medicaid. Of the Medicaid, $900,000 of that is IGT, or intergovernmental transfer, now called certified public expenditure. For those of you that have been following, what's happening is a big debate at the state level of what those nursing home losses from county homes will return to the counties. And there's a big debate about whether or not we'll continue to get that same level of money, and every year that becomes an ongoing discussion. If we were to lose that $900,000, it would be one of the most significant impacts on the viability of Hillview. So we're constantly looking for how are there ways, like Medicare, like assisted living, ways of supplementing the bottom line of Hillview. In addition to that, you should note that what's really unique about Hillview compared to other county nursing homes is that large percentage of private pay. Over $4.3 million in this year's budget is projected from private pay. Clients that choose to stay at Hillview pay a higher rate because that's their nursing home of choice. And we believe in the analysis that we've put together, because Medicaid and Medicare revenues are so inadequate in making up the full cost of care, the future economic viability of Hillview is tied to two things. One, continuation of IGT or CPE, that $900,000, which is critical because without it, it would make a huge hole in our revenue stream. And guess what? We don't make that determination. The state and federal government decide whether or not we continue to get that. And in addition to that is the continued ability to attract private pay clients. According to the staff at Hillview, and what Pete's going to touch about, is one of the key parts of attracting private pay clients is the ability to expand to meet their needs with different array of services. If you no longer need nursing home care but you want to stay on the campus, or your spouse wants to be in an assisted or independent living while you're still there in another type of facility, we don't offer the full range of services. And so we believe that this is one of the key issues about continuing to allow Hillview to evolve and still meet the needs and demands. Now, Pete's going to go over a lot of the questions, but I wanted you to get that context and background for why we're even talking about Hillview and its revenue stream.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
I think you have a question.
Oh.
Do you have questions specifically related to Steve's portion? Go ahead, then.
Thank you. At what point will we know about CPE?
It's probably 2-3 months away, but it's not on the entire amount of CPE. It's on the supplement to that. At this point...
How much of the $900,000 is that?
It's
ballpark.
I would, just under $500,000 is in question for Hillview.
So just in worst-case scenario, assume we lose that $500,000. What happens to Hillview?
It's $500,000 of a $13 million budget, so it's a significant amount.
Right. Can I ask the question?
I'm sorry.
What happens to the bottom line at Hillview then?
We would have to probably spend down their reserves, cut back in services. We'd have to come up with a plan to make up that loss of revenue.
And what are the reserves right now?
Ballpark. I don't have that exact number.
Gary, I guess what I'm getting at is it seems like the 20-year history lesson that we got a few minutes ago was prompted by money, mm-hmm. right? And the issue that's been looming over Lakeview has been money. Do we keep it open? Do we continue to lose money? If Hillview goes into that same category of drawing on levy dollars, is that the point, in your opinion, Steve O'Malley, that we make a decision about whether or not to stay in the nursing home business? Is when it becomes a financial question?
Yes.
So is it appropriate at this point in time, as we're looking at the continuum of care growing, to also have some of that conversation? I mean, I don't see any good news coming about that $500,000. So if that's going to trigger at least potentially a decision about financial viability, depending on how many reserves we have, depending on how long we can dip into those, I mean, are we forestalling an inevitable discussion that we need to have?
At Hillview, I believe they have enough reserves to last for some years. That wouldn't be forever.
Is some more than two, but less
than
two.
More than two, but less than 10, depending on all other revenues. It would force some difficult decisions on management mm-hmm. and on the county board, but I don't believe in a short period of time we would be forced to have Hillview asking us for tax levy.
Okay.
But I'm always trying to plan several years out in advance,
right.
and by asking Pete to do the things he's done with Medicare and other things, they're looking for the other revenue sources, because if we were driven into a position to ask for levy, we just don't have it to put new levy.
Right, so that's why I'm wondering if there's any value in coupling those conversations, or at least having preliminary discussions about what's our threshold for levy support. I'm hearing you say, no, we don't have it. So we have some years. And again, I understand I'm talking worst case scenario. I get that. But if the $500,000 doesn't come, and that's the first of a series of years when we have to pull out of reserves to keep Hillview afloat, at some point we're going to have that bigger discussion, you know, that higher view mm-hmm. discussion about, are we going to be in the nursing home business?
And I think that would be valuable. However, every year we've been under that threat, and every year we've actually made better finances.
Well, the county board hasn't had that discussion about whether or not we stay in the nursing home business.
No, I'm just saying financially,
yeah.
every year we've had the threat that IGT is going
right,
to be taken
but
away.
I'm saying
year.
From the role of the yeah. county board in terms of policy
yes.
direction, having that discussion is our responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And my question is that coming sooner than later, and should that be part of what we're talking about, you know, kind of adjunct to this discussion about growing the continuum of care? Because if we
would follow your direction on that. We're trying to bring you up to date on the last several years of discussion with Aging and Long-Term Care mm-hmm. Committee, because my understanding was that we've been in the business. Nobody dealt me a new hand of cards to say whether or not we should be in Hillview. If you want to have the discussion about long-term viability, Hillview, I'm trying to give you the background to show you what are the dynamics around that.
Okay, and while that stalling just happened on my part, did we find out what the reserves were? No, okay. Can we find that out,
yeah.
please? Thanks.
Ralph Geary.
Well, that discussion is fine, but the key to Hillview, when we did this study a few years ago, was keeping their census numbers high. If he loses 20, what is it, 199 a year now?
199, yeah.
Okay, if they go to 179, let's say you get 50,000 a patient, you're down a million in revenues. The one thing we lost is he can't cut a million in expenses because they got two in this pod and three in this pod. He can't lay off enough nurses, food care workers and stuff to make up the million. The whole key to keep that thing is to keep their census numbers up. I'm not on that committee, but they should have probably brought this thing in about 10 years ago because it helps keep their census numbers up. If at some point in time you have a discussion about the viability or financial viability, this is an asset. This will stay a nursing home if we're in it or somebody else is in it. You will recoup this probably on the, and I'm not saying to get out of the nursing home business, but this is an asset. This thing helps keep the numbers up. They should have probably done this years ago, but the county board probably stalled. Roger, you were on that committee more than I was back then. The key is keeping the body count up at Hillview, and then we don't have this problem. So body count or whatever you want to call it, or the census numbers up. But that's the key, right? Keep your census
exactly.
numbers up.
Exactly. It's all about census and staffing. Those are the two things that we can somewhat control. We can't, you know, buy less food. We can't turn the heat down. It's numbers of beds, and I would definitely say that we have the best census in the area. We have the highest percentage.
Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. I understand the concerns that are being expressed, but it seems to me that what's on the agenda tonight is to address the consideration of whether to look at the next step in relation to providing assisted living. And so I would hope that the presentation could be completed, and at that stage then we could address questions and concerns.
With that segue, here's Pete.
Thank you. Kelly Kramer is the Assistant Administrator of Hillview and the Carroll Heights Manager. Been working closely with our team for the Assisted Living Project, and she's quite knowledgeable on that, so that's why she's up here. You have this PowerPoint in front of you, and I'm going to go over first now the first slide that I have is the history. As you probably know, for over 125 years, Hillview has provided long-term care at this site. We're originally the Poor Farm, and now we've moved into a modern healthcare facility. As the needs of the long-term care field have changed, so has the services offered at Hillview. During the 1950s, we constructed Carroll Heights, which was 167 beds. And after that building used up its useful life and wasn't economical to the needs of the residents, we moved in to Hillview in 1981. I think we started off at 223 beds, and we're down to 199 now and have been there for about 10 years. The old Hillview was converted into the Independence Senior Complex in 1984. To remain viable, Hillview must continue to evolve like we have over the past in the continuum of care, and assisted living is the next step. Hillview's mission, you probably all have this memorized, but the mission of Hillview Healthcare Center is to provide affordable, quality nursing care services in a family-like environment to the La Crosse County residents, including those who may be difficult or without financial support. Our goal is to provide residents with the best care possible. And our, you know, our mission defines this project's purpose. Nothing in this mission said anything about running a nursing home and a nursing home only. It's meeting the needs of our residents, the healthcare needs. Yep. And you don't have this slide in front of you, but this is where we sit. You can see the part in blue is the no assisted living. On the top is 199 beds, no assisted living. Then we have Carroll Heights. And then there's community services that we don't have either. So there's part of the continuum that we don't have. And but as I will show in the future slides, the model of long-term care continuum is changing. You don't have this slide either, only because it'll get a little busy on your sheet of paper. This is a trend in Wisconsin facilities. There's been an 84% increase in the assisted living beds since 1995. You can see that big arrows going up, and then the long-term care facilities have been going down, and that's 2007, 421, down from 472. As I checked today, there was 402 nursing homes, so they're continuing to decline. You can see the trend in long-term care services is moving towards assisted living. Okay, you should have the rest of these slides. These are the nursing homes in La Crosse County, and you can see in the blue color is the or the purple color, purplish color, is the number of nursing home beds. The blue color is the assisted living beds. And we have Bethany St. Joel, Bethany Lutheran Homes, Franciscan Skemp, Catholic Residential Services, which is St. Joel's Nursing Home, then Hillview and Lakeview. And you can see all of them have a type of assisted living services on their campus or part of their continuum of care, where the two county facilities do not. Okay, our strategic goal for this, justification of a 24-bed assisted living facility would enhance the Hillview's viability, generating new revenue by expanding our continuum of care available to their clients. The potential market for those discharged would come from Hillview and Carroll Heights Assisted Living, who often have told us they prefer to stay on our campus. And you can see, last year we discharged 47 people to assisted living. That's 47 people that were our customer, our clients, that went to another assisted living. So we definitely think we could meet the need. But our objective is to complete the master building plan towards moving towards the household care model of assisted living, and the financial plan to be refined and finished with the PDC study design group. And that was decided, that's the architect group. PDC is architect. That's drawing our plans out. Just a little information on what is an RCAC, and this is in front of you. RCAC is a residential care apartment complex providing services of not more than 28 hours per week. They do supportive care, personal care, nursing care, and an assisted living would fall somewhere between Carroll Heights and Hillview. So it meets that middle ground that we're missing. There's two types of RCACs. One is certified, and they may accept people who qualify for medical assistance, family care, or community options program. And that's a Medicaid program, family care, the MCO. And then there's registered. And they serve only the private pay tenants. The private pay tenants couldn't accept Medicaid, so people that were really needing the affordable assisted living. And then what is senior housing? Those are apartments. That's a term you probably hear out in the community a lot. It's a wide variety, but it's really an apartment with optional services for a fee. So you pay one fee, and then if you want meals or nursing care, really not nursing care as much as maybe a foot clinic or somebody coming in to clean your apartment, it could be senior housing. And the perfect example is Carroll Heights. Hillview Health Center has a positive image in our community and with our existing customers. We're listening for our residents and staff. Not a day goes by barely that someone doesn't ask me about our potential assisted living, and they'd be happy to continue on our campus with that. Our social workers are constantly telling us they're discharging to assisted living facilities and that they're being asked. Other things about Hillview, we have active involved residents, strong stakeholder group. We have a beautiful campus that's enjoyed by the residents. We have plenty of good land. And if chose to do, this RCAC would serve as a residence center for Hillview and offer help potential SNF losses, that skilled nursing facility losses. It'd meet the needs of our existing customers that live at Carroll Heights and Hillview, especially the ones with family there. It'd create some local jobs. It shows the community that we're committed to improvement and evolving, and it would continue with the long-term care and short-term needs rehab, both in Medicaid Part B and Part B private insurance. We'd have that offer. It supports the low-income residents with the MCO. As I said, some of the local assisted living facilities did not accept the MCO. And then we all know the baby boomers are coming. The over 65 age is growing. I would say it's probably growing a little bit faster on the south side of La Crosse, too, than maybe on Alaska. Next slide. Some of the questions that we came up with. Is there an oversupply of assisted living beds in the community, and isn't the private sector market already meeting that? The answer that we have is it depends on how you define the market.
Many of our 47 clients that we discharge to assisted living will struggle to find the affordable options. We feel and have been told many of their first questions is, what's the most affordable assisted living? What's the least expensive? Not, you know, they want a list of the lowest price ones in their area, and then they move on. There are some vacancies, and we'll get to that in the following slides coming up. You can go to the next one. Yeah. Here you can see, and I hope you can see this pretty well, Mr. Wilson sent a letter of most of these facilities and where their openings were. You can see this on your slide. And we broke it down by La Crosse area, Onalaska area, and then West Salem in the Holman area. And they did have some openings. I would say you can look at each of these numbers and compare and ask questions. They, I think a few of those, Heskew, Metalwood, had 15 openings and 45 beds. They are the highest or one of the highest in La Crosse area. That could be a reason. There's a direct correlation between open apartments and cost. The higher cost apartments are generally the ones that are open. The lower cost apartments are generally more filled.
Pete, I have a question on this slide.
Okay.
Presumably, we would be certified, not registered.
Exactly, yeah.
Which of these is which on the slide, do you know?
We have that. I don't. The Willows is not. Shelby Terrace.
Not certified.
Not certified, correct. Shelby Terrace is. Meadowwood is not. I believe the Village on Cass is. Swiss Haven is. And Bethany on Cass are. So Meadowwood is not. And the Willows is not. That's in La Crosse. Since we started doing this assisted living, they have talked about becoming more certified, but they could have been certified from day one, and some of them chose to, some of them chose not to. Right now, the Villas did just switch over. It's about halfway down your page to certified. Eagle Crest, some are, not all of them are. They have the potential. I think it's a matter of signing up and doing the paperwork, but not all of them are. Laurel Manor, Springbrook, Salem Terrace, Bethany Heights. I don't know about Bethany Heights for sure. And Prairie Home, I would believe, is. So there's a combination of both. Any other questions on this slide?
Nope.
Okay. If the private sector market is meeting the demand for low income, should the county offer assisted living? Our analysis and experience shows that private providers had openings on the high end and the cost, on the high end cost. So the ones that were open were generally higher and not meeting the market demand until we got into this realm. The income range we targeted by the county would help serve the seniors under this proposal. So we would definitely come in on the low end. We would be the low third of the providers. And I have another graph that shows you the prices. Second question on that. Private providers indicate that there would not be financing available because of excess capacity of assisted living beds. Wouldn't the county's cost be higher this, and why would this work? Well, the two big things are the land we already have, and the financing cost of the county would be less than the comparable private sector. We could also fund our soft costs through the reserves at Carroll Heights, and we'll be turn that back over to our residents at the lowest cost possible. Some of our competitors that we've named and are on the slides are they have stockholders, and they have to answer those, and they have a bottom line to meet, and their main goal is return on investment. Our main goal, and some others, is meeting the needs of the residents. Not all of them are for profit by any means. These are 2008 rates. These are what Kelly found last year, so they're almost a year old. I'm pretty sure I would bet that most of them raised rates at the end of the year or sometime over the course of the year. You have that on there. You can see that Shelby Terrace is low. They're just a one-bedroom. There is a graph or a dialog box on the bottom. There's two bedroom, one bedroom, and studio. Shelby Terrace has one bedroom and studios. they're full. Swift Haven has just a couple openings. There's the next one on that graph. And they're about full, too. They have two bedrooms and one bedroom. And we think we would be in that market range. Those buildings are older buildings that they converted to assisted living. We would have a new building. And I think Mr. O'Malley's going to conclude now.
The next piece that's actually a separate handout is a detailed estimated pro forma that finance and Hillview staff and administration worked on, which is to show a projection. If you were to go ahead with this, it would take some time for ramp-up costs, but even some suggestions on how we would deal with the financing. It's a very busy page, but let's assume conservatively that there was, after the first year of ramp-up, that there was a 15% vacancy rate, similar to what the other facilities have reported. And you go down from total revenue of $591,000 through all of your expenses to operate of $428,000, that your estimated profit from the RCAC is about $163,000. About $100,000 of it is estimated to be direct revenue back to Hillview, where you can retire or absorb some of the indirect or administrative costs because of Pete's time, Kelly's time, other administrative costs that can be charged back and actually be a new revenue source for the oversight of the facility. And then a net profit of about $60,000. So in essence, the total net profit of $163,000 is made up of $100,000 to Hillview and just a net that goes back to that revenue. It's actually about $60,000 higher at a 5% vacancy. So this is relatively conservative after you do the ramp up. Our suggested means of financing this, and we do know this number exactly, is that Carroll Heights has built up almost a $2 million reserve. We would suggest, if you proceed with this, that you fund the soft costs, the beds, the desks, the things that end up having usable life of less than 10 years, fund that from your reserve of Carroll Heights, $840,000, and don't have debt on that. And then spread out the debt for the $1.8 million, if that's what the estimate ends up coming in from the PDC study, spread that out with either borrowing from the state trust fund or the general fund or some other debt decision, and we'd be able to do that for a relatively low interest. So you use some cash from Carroll Heights that has built up that reserve, and some would be from debt service, and you'd end up spreading out the cost quite a bit and end up preserving quite a substantial return back to Hillview. So again, we figured it both on a 15% vacancy, we figured it on less, but again, it depends more on what the actual results are at any given time. But that seems to be a reasonable place, since we have 47 discharges a year, and a facility that's would be less than half of that that demand at 24 approximately. And then the last slide that we have is just the types of things that we've identified that you're probably likely to consider is the long-term direction and viability of Hillview while considering any impact within the community. Market timing and impact on other providers is difficult to predict, particularly when it's at the low end of the market. And however, it does seem clear that adding assisted living on Hillview's campus is consistent with our history and the mission of Hillview. Expanding the continuum of care would enhance options and expand revenue for Hillview, and the PDC design study will confirm costs and site plan so that we can then refine this projection and come back and say what else would happen. That's part of what we had anticipated, was actually producing this analysis as part of what the final PDC numbers are, which is actually what allows us to go ahead. If you were in a position that you decide to not go ahead this year, you haven't wasted anything. The PDC design study will give you all the information if you wanted to proceed in 2010 or beyond. Each of this step along the way helps us know what your long-term strategy is for the Hillview campus and tries to fit into all of those things. So hopefully this information gives you a bit more information than we did provide last time. As I said, we spent about an hour with the private providers and tried to answer their questions as much as we could in trying to give you information. So that's what we've been working on, and I guess any of us are available for questions, as well as, of course, the site plan over there can help to describe other things as well.
Questions? Joe Veenstra.
Thank you. I was just wondering if there's any
And are there any other counties where they've added assisted living similar to this in the last maybe decade that we might have some understanding of how that proceeded?
I did a survey of the county. There's 36 counties that operate 42 nursing homes. 9 of them have some form of assisted living, RCAC or CBRF. Obviously, 10 years ago, there was probably 0 or 1. It's growing. In my talking to them, I could get you exact numbers the best we could, but in my talking to them, they're very happy they did it. It supports the continuum of care, meets the needs of their clients. They're very pleased that they did it. Some have built their bigger cities, but up to 100-bed assisted living facilities.
I had a flurry of hands all go up at the same time, and I think these are the hands that I saw. Chuck, Ralph, Bridget, and Maureen. Did I miss anybody? Okay, that's the order I'll be calling on you. So, oops, so Jay over there and Ray. Okay. Jay and Ray. All right, Chuck, you're up.
Pete, how many people would you have to hire for this facility?
An estimate would be about 24. This is a mix of full-time, probably full-time equivalency 12 to 14, but would there be 24 people working either full-time, part-time?
Okay. How do you decide who can live in assisted living? Is it first come, first serve? Is it first
no, there's an assessment that we do that a nurse would do, qualified nurse, and every facility is that same way. And we want people placed appropriately in the right setting. Some people want to come to a setting and they might need to step above.
One thing we found out when we added Carroll Heights, it enhanced Hillview. Like this will enhance Hillview too, but it has another side to it. And 10 or 20 years down the road, it also will enhance whatever sits in this county board be more valuable to sell. Mm-hmm. So that's the other side of the coin too, that it to me it's a win-win situation. I was not satisfied and I voted no on because of the presentation and that, and I think I've talked to Steve about it, and this was an excellent presentation tonight. I think we all probably should learn a little bit from it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Pete, I have a question. Of the approximately 47 people who were discharged last year, mm-hmm. how difficult would it be for you to find out where they went? Is that possible?
We could find out with pretty good accuracy where they went.
That might be a useful piece of information for us.
Mm-hmm, I can do that.
Okay. And how long it took them to go to wherever they went?
Well, to answer your question somewhat, we discharged 300-some people last year, so we're discharging every day. Most people go home. I think I'm a little high in that number. I think it's closer to 250.
Okay.
I can get you accurate numbers, but just from talking to our social workers, I know majority of them have been discharged to the south side, Shelby Terrace, Swift Haven, Bethany on Cass, because they have been there before in the past, now they're going back.
Well, I just read that two, and I think it's your question, two almost two-thirds, 65% stay within 10 miles of their home.
Their personal residence.
Their personal residence, not the family home. Okay. And most of them within, it was like 35%. Yeah, it was 35% were within 5 miles.
Okay. Ralph Gary.
Okay, earlier you talked about that $840,000 transfer out of Carroll Heights. Are they going to repay this back, or are you just looking at that as part of the money of the Hillview overall operation?
We've viewed Carroll Heights and Hillview as segregated to that operation's purpose, not to the rest of the county. Since they aren't supported by tax levy, that would be a benefit to the Hillview operation.
No, I'm talking about, does the assisted living pay back $840,000 to Carroll Heights, or does it just we're just paying it out of Carroll Heights because we think it's part of the whole Hillview operation?
Right.
Okay, so they won't repay it back.
Right.
Okay, and when are we going to make a decision on this?
When the PDC study comes back and with more direction from County Board, it'll come back through Aging Long-Term Care Committee. I know they've expressed an interest in being a more integral part of some of the design and site plan issues, so it'll be later this year.
Okay, yeah. I don't think you should drag on this. Thing's been dragging forever. I think we should get this to the floor, you know, as quickly as possible, because I don't want to start making decisions when Hillview is in a bad financial situation. I'd rather make it when they're in a good financial situation, and if we're doing something that enhances that to keep in that situation, then we don't have to have that discussion.
Gary?
I now have an answer to Tara's earlier question.
Why is nobody surprised?
The available cash balance as of January, I don't have anything more current, but as of January was about $3 million. It should be about the same at the present time.
Bridget?
I don't think I heard clearly exactly how you decided on a 24-bed facility. You said it was about half of a 47-bed facility. Is that just a conservative estimate of how many beds you'd need? Or?
No, well, based on land and economies of scale, we thought we would do that. But one thing that our committee wanted us to do is, if we build 24, whatever the number is, have the ability to add on
and
keep it going. And that's the direction we're following for the board. We really wouldn't want to go smaller just based on the economies of scale, and to go bigger, there's options there.
Yeah, I was wondering if you needed to go bigger, but as long as you're ready for that, that'll
be great. That was put in the RFP, correct.
Maureen?
I also want to ask about those 47 people that were discharged from Hillview. Are you able to say what their income is, what their financial ability to pay is?
Yeah, we can say that and have looked at that. I don't have that exactly in front of me, but we know when somebody leaves Hillview, they're either private pay, Medicare, or medical assistance are the three main ones. So we know what they are when they leave.
Okay. What I'm wondering about is how many of those are private pay or how many of them would be something else.
I can give you the exact number, but I can say definitely the majority are private pay.
Okay. Well, then, if they are private pay and presumably able to live in one of these higher-priced units around town, how are we going to know that these units that we build are going to go to lower income people? Can we restrict that? What about if this new facility, if these new 24 beds are filled with private pay people, and then we still have all these people who really can't afford to be paying these expensive rates, still with nowhere to go and still struggling to just meet the market rates as they are?
Right. The private medical assistance program, family care, is based on income. And even though somebody is private pay, there's a threshold that they have to be above their private pay. Just even if they had $1 million sitting in their checking account, they may not go to the highest end one. Most of the people that we talk to, our social workers and Kelly, they want to know in order what's the price range, and they look at that first. They also like to stick close to home. I know somewhat what you're getting at. It's choice. It's about choice, and we feel that they would make a good choice by coming to Hillview. We can't guarantee those 47 people, but with our history and our satisfaction surveys, I feel, in my opinion, we would have gotten the majority of those people to stay on our campus.
Okay, but I'm thinking, though, that most people want to go to new facilities. They want to go to nice places. These are going to be the newest facilities in town. People who are of means, people who are fairly high income, are going to want to go to Hillview. They're happy to go to the Hillview nursing facility. Sure. They'll be happy to go to the assisted living. I'm just still concerned that even when these are built, that there will be people who are in the lower ranges who are not going to be able to get into affordable, because this is going to be first come, first serve. Do we have a way? Are we permitted to restrict this to the lower end people? The lower
I think what
people?
We would do is something similar to what we do right now at Hillview. If there is a waiting list at Hillview, those tenants at Carroll Heights will have first dibs, if your first choice, versus if so, I think we would probably do something very similar to that. If there is a waiting list at our assisted living, it would come to our current customers being first on those waiting lists. They would be bumped up, what we currently do.
But your current customers aren't necessarily low-income people.
Majority of them are at Carroll Heights, yes.
Not at Hillview. No, at Carroll Heights, we're really probably the lowest price of senior housing, definitely in that area at Carroll Heights. That's where we choose to be. But to answer your question, there is no way we can restrict who comes. It is first come, first serve. I don't know of a way that we could say you make too much to come to this facility. I just don't think we can do that.
Okay. Well,
Well, I'm not sure then that we're necessarily solving the problem of helping low-income people then by building this.
Jay Johnson.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions, but first, just in response to this most recent discussion, I'm not sure there is a problem with affordability. There are openings in every assisted living across the board, regardless of the price, and most are certified for MCO. So I'm not convinced that there's a crisis or problem with people finding affordable assisted living. That said, my question for you, Pete, is what is your sense has been running at Carroll Heights? Can you tell us?
Today we have about four available apartments.
Has that been pretty consistent in the last year or so?
Yeah, every spring we pick up through the summer, and then every winter it goes down. People don't necessarily like to move in the winter, so whatever our census is, October 15th, it's rare to add somebody, this senior population. The average age of Carroll Heights is probably above 85. They just don't like to move in the winter, so we peak in Valley. But we have four open apartments, according to Kelly.
Okay, like kind of
out of 59.
Defeats the purpose of my next question was going to be if you've ever looked at converting some of Carroll Heights into assisting, but it doesn't sound that's a
well. That's a good question, but at a 50-year-old building that doesn't meet the standards now to convert it, it didn't make sense for us to do that. The bathrooms at Carroll Heights are some other downfall. It's a long story, but it just wasn't viable to convert a 50-year-old building to a new assisted living. And some of the people that are coming in, they want more space, they want more technology, they want more outlets. You know, Carroll Heights has one outlet in each room. These people probably have four outlets in every room.
Thank you. Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How did you select the mix, six studios, 12 one-bedrooms, and six two-bedrooms?
Our mix was somewhat based on a guess and somewhat based on the needs. There is no magic number, and that's why we have the architect there. They've built 25 assisted living facilities the last couple of years. They somewhat know the mix. People do want more. I've heard a wide range of what you should have. 6, 12, and 6 we thought was a fair number. One thing we talked about the architect to do, he puts the one-bedroom by the studio to make it a two-bedroom. You could knock out a wall or put a wall through there. It could all be two bedrooms. Or, you know, you wouldn't have to do all. You could do one of those. So they like to mix the studio and the one bedroom together. They could easily be, semi-easily be converted to a two bedroom.
The soft cost of $840,000, if you end up having to borrow for that, then all of a sudden the economic viability becomes substantially less, correct? If you're paying for it all, you'd have, what, roughly $37,000 in interest the first year without PI.
That's right. It was actually my recommendation that we looked at it this way because the $840,000 is currently invested as all our reserves at about 1 or 2%. This would actually be a better return by investing in a new revenue source than to just invest the reserves for a small investment rate of under 2%. So we thought it was actually a better return to put it into the initial operating beds and those kind of depreciable expenses.
Under that logic, why wouldn't you take all $2.6 million?
Because a building you really could depreciate a lot quicker than 20. That'll be a debate by the county board when we bring that in. We were just trying to give you as much information as we could. I tend to believe the capital fixtures, things that last longer than 20 years, you ought to spread out over a period of time. But things that a bed can last a year, it can last 10 years, it can last 5 years. A desk, you know, each one of those things will not last 20-plus years like a building will.
Which brings up, where would then the, on your $60,000, does that include that you're, in theory, your net profit replacing the soft cost stuff? I don't see any place for depreciation of the soft cost.
We'd have to evaluate that and come back to that, but this was trying to work to give you at least a ramp-up cost. Certainly during a period of time, yes, the you'd also know what your total vacancy was. Was the 15% inaccurate? But we didn't do a comprehensive 20-year projection, no.
Oh, that's enough for the. I just think that this, to me, appears slanted. And I'm sure that's not how you meant it, but I think that without a great deal of stretching my imagination. I think you've slanted this pretty well.
Well, actually, to respond, we thought it was pretty conservative at a 15% vacancy rate when we're discharging more to this type of living than 24 beds could accommodate, as well as we thought it was the most prudent way of using Carroll Heights reserves to fund depreciation that will actually be a better return. If you look at $163,000 is your net return on investing a total of $2.6 million. I think that's a pretty good rate of return. I don't know, Gary, what, $163,000 on $2.6 million? I think if you had $2.6 million and invested and got that annually, I think you'd be pretty pleased with the return.
Well, then what are you taking the $103,000 out for? You can't have it both ways, sir.
Because the $103,000 is a gain. Yes, we can, because it's a gain to the system. I'm trying to separate how much is recovery of admin costs, which is new revenue to Hillview. You're not getting that revenue now. If you don't do this, you don't get the $103,000. It's a way of covering overhead. And the $60,000 is over and above that. If the long-term viability of Hillview is your goal, which is our goal, gaining $163,000 of new revenue is better than not having a facility.
So you're raking up $103,000. To put into Hillview's budget.
I don't like your characterization. We're retiring administrative costs that we legitimately can charge to, just like right now we charge Carroll Heights for administrative costs for management and overhead. You don't need, when it's on the same campus, as many people to manage an operation as an additional facility. It's a legitimate means of accounting to have another revenue source where you can charge off some of your administrative costs.
No, and you'll pay Gary's costs, your costs.
No, this isn't us. This is administrative costs at Hillview.
So Hillview doesn't pay anything back to the county for your guys' costs?
We don't get, well, we'll start a separate discussion about that. We don't get most of our indirect costs from most of our departments. That's a whole separate discussion.
Okay.
We charge some of them, but most entities in this operation are unable to pay all of the cost of indirects. And that's a whole separate debate.
Yeah, exactly.
This is about recovering administrative overhead costs for Hillview, not about corp council, administrator, finances. It has nothing to do with standard indirect costs. That's a whole separate discussion.
Thank you, sir.
Gary.
Steve asked me what the return would be on $163,000 profit from $2.6 million. That's a 6.2% return, so that's better than money in the bank.
Any other questions, Strieber?
No, that's enough for now.
Okay. Next is Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think that this is just the most logical, smart way to go in the continuum of care for La Crosse County, and I really don't see many risks. If you release 47 people a year and you're building a facility with 24, you're still only meeting about 50% of the needs. And, you know, people my age and a little older are growing by leaps. The numbers are growing by leaps and bounds. Well, I am too, but the numbers are too. And and so the demand is just going to get greater. So I don't really see where there's much risk. I think there's a real, real need. Thanks.
Actually, Ann, we don't release them. We discharge them. It's across the street we release them. And we don't want them back. Well, they might. Tara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for everybody's, a reminder for everybody, Western Wisconsin Cares is the name of the CMO, MCO that we keep throwing around those letters. If we can help promote that name, I would appreciate it. And the relationship here is really strong, and I think that that's important between Western Wisconsin Cares and Hillview, and we appreciate very much having you and the services that you provide. I want to be very clear about this. I am not opposed to this idea, and perhaps my colleagues to my left are perceiving that in some way. My concern
is there are
is
no
very,
colleagues to your left.
I have
Tara.
No colleagues to my left. Okay, thank you. What I am most concerned about is, you know, not the numbers, not the study even so much, although I do, pains me as it does, have to agree with Supervisor Ebert that this presentation, you gave us no cons at all. And I don't know if that was the point that he was making, but this was very much a presentation about why we should do this. And I think that that's your role. I haven't heard anything from the front of the room about what the risk might be or what the risks might be, and I think that that would be helpful in the conversation as well. But the very first bullet point on the slide that's up there right now is what I am concerned about. And it really is our job as county board supervisors to make sure that if we are making this decision to grow the continuum of care at Hillview, we are making a commitment to stay in the nursing home business and to invest in that continuum of care. And my concern is that we don't repeat some of what happened 4 years ago or however long ago it was at Lakeview, which was a bunch of us got scared and freaked out and said maybe we should get out of this business. That I think we have to be clear that we are making this commitment to expand the continuum of care, and by doing so, recommit ourselves to being in this business. And it's not like every other county. It's not like most counties that we have stayed in the nursing home business, and we want to grow that. And I think that Supervisor Friedland raises some really important questions about, are we able, if we stay in the nursing home business, to target our services at citizens of La Crosse County who need them the most and who are financially challenged and should still have an array of choices available to them. And I think, you know, right now we don't see a way of doing that, of making sure that low-income folks get into these spots if we, in fact, add this assisted living. I would push back on that and challenge us to see if we can figure out a way to do that. Because I think that is who we need to be serving. It's why we've stayed in the business at Lakeview. It's why we've kept Hillview open. It's why we added Carroll Heights. It's why we're likely to add this project. It's because we need to meet a need that is not currently being met. That's what you've sold us on. And I think we should really try hard, and I don't know if it's, you know, the certification process that that limits us or whatever it is, but I'm asking you to think more about whether or not we can, in fact, target who we are able to serve in the whole, you know, in all of the facilities on the Hillview campus, because I think that that's really important. And last thing I want to say is that I agree with Supervisor Geary also. That one hurts as well as the Supervisor Ebert one. I'm sorry, Ralph. I hate to do that to you. But I think it is important that we make this decision when Hillview is healthy. I agree with that. I think it's smart, but it has to be, in my opinion, from that higher the higher view of, are we in fact committing to staying in this business? And now we're growing the continuum of the business that we're staying in. And I think that that is our job as county board supervisors. I hope that that's what everyone is agreeing to when we start voting on these issues, is that we believe in Hillview. We believe that it should be a broader continuum of care. We hope that it serves the people who need it the most. And that's what our mission is, to be in that business.
That's my answer was, that's our mission. Our mission is on my second slide. And that's what I follow every day. We make tough choices, and we make choices that other healthcare facilities wouldn't pay for and take people that they wouldn't take. We would continue that. We want to come in as the on the low end of affordability. If somebody does want the movie theater and the bar and the restaurant, there's other choices. You know, if they want that, we don't have that, and they may go somewhere else.
Pete, would you have the information Tara requested, which is probably a discussion with Bill in terms of the legalities of saying we're low income only, would you have that information? And secondly, would you have that perhaps chart showing what happened with those 47 people, perhaps in time for Steve's administrator's report next Thursday at County Board? Is that too quick, or could you get that information?
To the second part, definitely. We can get you where the 47 people went within 24 hours. We have records of that. The first part of that was how we keep it just for the afford, you know.
How
on the
could you, going forward?
We can research that and do our best with, you know, there. By accepting Medicaid and Medicare money, federal government,
we have certain restrictions not to give people special preference by any means. We have to follow that. And that I think that can be considered the low end or the high end. Once you accept that money, we can't pick and choose who we take. But I can research.
Didn't you tell us that you were going to pick and choose people who are already in Hillview would have first dibs on this?
We want people who are in our campus to have this as an option. If we have...
Okay, well, isn't that discrimination then?
No, because they have a history with us. They are there with us. Many people go to Hillview and keep their apartment at Carroll Heights. In fact, all of them do for a while. And we wouldn't want them to have not the ability to do that. We want to people to keep our existing customers. They like us. We like them. We want to continue that. Right now, Carroll Heights has 3 or 4 openings. You know, if somebody comes out tomorrow and wants to rent the apartment, they would probably get it. Hillview has openings. If we can take care of their needs, we would accept them. If somebody has a history with us that is at Carroll Heights, we definitely do our darndest to get them in there.
Steve, let's add that on your report next week, and Pete, see what you can get prior to that time on both of those issues.
Okay.
In addition to that, I'll try to do what we attempted to do was answer the questions that other people had identified as the risks, but we'll come back with, you know, what's the downside and try to do a better job. We're trying to respond to a lot of questions about this in a short period of time, but what would be the downside if we didn't have, if it wasn't 15%? It takes us longer to ramp up, or we don't, well, we don't build it at all. We can show you what that is as well. You have reserves that are making about 2%.
Right. And I really feel the downside is the downside to Hillview. You know, if we don't build the assisted living, we'll forget about it and move on and just keep going. But this is helps our Hillview campus in many, many ways. And the downside is the Hillview continuum of care in the citizens and residents of La Crosse County. But that's just one of them.
Right. Specifically in terms of downside, I think what Tara was looking at was risk. If you do build it.
Okay.
John.
I just want to announce that I've got 9 people on this list here for working at the Salvation Army. That's 8 county supervisors and Mr. O'Malley. She said 6 to 8 people, so I think we're good. If anybody else wants to jump up and help, I think we're in good shape. I'll call with reminders, but remember it's at 4 o'clock Wednesday, May 20th at the Salvation Army in the gymnasium. That's where their kitchen is. And I'll call with reminders, but those of you who signed up, Bill Brockmiller, Roger Plesha, Joe Veenstra, Marwin Friedland, Tammy Sue Gamroth, Tara Johnson, Bridget Flood, John Mettinger, Steve O'Malley, and if one or two more, we'll try to work in. But just on, I got the 4, just quickly on this thing, because I think you made a mistake on your math, and I'm in favor of this 100%. The sooner we do it, the better. I want to get it going. But in that total net profit, it says $80,528. I really think that's supposed to be a negative $120,000 the first year, because every other year, every other column you're subtracting, and in that one you didn't subtract. If you're $19,000 in the hole and then you get another $100,000 payment, you're $120,000 in the hole the first year if you're subtracting from the other 3. So I think
that would sound right, correct?
I think the first year you're $120,000.
The first year we don't do well.
Right, but I just saying, I think that bottom, that 80,000 is incorrect. It should be minus 120.
I think you're right.
Okay.
Truth in advertising.
Audrey.
Thank you. A couple of observations in relation to this whole project. One of the significant goals that I think or needs that is out there is that the department, the health department or DHS or whatever they're calling themselves these days, I mean, there's a major, major focus on keeping people out of nursing homes. And one of the most significant ways to be able to do that is to have an alternative that's available for them that meets their needs. And we're having another interesting figure, I think, would be to know how many people are have been released from nursing homes and back into the community, many of whom would have gone into assisted living rather than being in a nursing home. So there's a cost savings to the county in that particular situation also, because of the fact that it is for people on medical assistance, for them to be able to stay in assisted living rather than nursing home. There's what, a difference of probably almost $4,000 a month, would you say, is a paid?
That's a good estimate, yeah.
Yeah.
It can be up to $6,000 a month at a nursing home.
So that's a potential benefit in relation to health care costs. And then there's another need that you can't, there's no way you can put a dollars and cents value on it, and that is the value of serving older couples, and we're seeing more and more of these couples living together for 60-year wedding anniversaries in the paper now. Well, what is happening in many cases is they need to be, one needs more care than the other. So do you want to put somebody who's really in need of nursing home care and then having their spouse having to live miles away? Think about what that's doing to their families. And if you're talking about people in their 90s, their families, I mean, their adult children are already in retirement. And so you're talking 3-4 generations in some cases, where for them to be able to come together for as family gatherings and to visit their relatives, it makes it so much more convenient and more family friendly for them to be able to visit on one campus instead of having to travel from place to place. Another point that was made this morning that I'm not sure that it came up tonight is that the number of current residents at Carroll Heights that are really bordering on the need or maybe already needing assisted living. And I see a lot of that as I go around and do my other job too, that as people fail, they do need more support. And to live even in a facility like Carroll Heights, which provides a lot more services in many ways than most of the elderly residences, there still is a need for a transition there. And on the affordability issue, well, a question that I came up in the course of the discussion, talking about the soft costs and furnishings, to my knowledge, a number of the assisted living facilities have people bring their own furniture in.
That's correct.
So that's a hidden cost that is not showing up in their monthly rent costs either. I was in one this afternoon, and I know very well that the lady brought her own furniture into it. So there are just so many reasons why. And the other thing is that within the campus, I don't see that there's any problem with giving priority to the people that are already doing business with us. It's just moving people around. And if what would help there is, because Carroll Heights is not the glamour spot of town, but it's a very adequate facility, most of the people that we've got at Carroll Heights, I would suspect, would fall beneath the ceilings. And if we were to use funding, financing, HUD financing in any way in relation to it, then there would also be caps that we could use, and that might be a reason to consider using HUD funding if we're really serious about keeping the facility most affordable. So those are some of my thoughts. By now, I'm sure you know that I really, really believe this is important that we do it, and I hope that some of those points are helpful. Thank you.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. My question is pretty short and probably get a pretty short answer. When we first started this discussion here, I noticed that the VA, the revenue we generated from VA was 9.9 $5-7 million a year.
That was only $100,000. There's a whole group of revenues in that.
Other. They're more other.
That's other revenue, which includes VA, debt, contributions. There's a whole bunch of things that are. So it's. I wish we got $900,000 from the VA.
Well,
but it's about $100,000.
That maybe that's what I'm going at. Then where now? Who handles the people from VA that are assigned to nursing homes or assisted living? Well, are they? Do they go to a certain area? Do they stay in Tomo? What happens?
The VA is keeping things closer to home. Last I heard, there is 3 nursing homes with a VA contract. Hillview is one of them. They really want to keep things within the VA system. They want to keep their continuum. So I think it speaks volumes that we still have a contract and they still want to work with us because they dropped contracts with 90-some percent of the nursing homes they had.
And would these assisted living, do they do that type of providing?
I'm not sure exactly what they do. They do have their VA centers and hospitals around the country. I'm sure they must have some transitional stuff. None in our area that they operate as far as assisted living. And they want to keep people in-house.
Joe Veenstra.
I guess I was trying to figure out what the plan was to come back to another meeting and have more of the con stuff that Supervisor Johnson was requesting. And then
what I had envisioned is that Steve would give a report with that information. We would have at most a very brief discussion, not a lengthy one. And then we've got that report coming in a couple months or whenever that is. Then we'd have a much bigger, broader debate.
I think Supervisor Friedland raised a good point about, you know, what is the end we're seeking here? And that's what we talked about in that